I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Now, Washington Mornings on the Mall. 105.9 FM. At AM 630.
WMAL. 7:07 right here on WMAL, which is where Washington comes to talk, by the way. We got a whole lot for you in the next 2 hours, so stay with us at 7:35. Michael Durso, he's the Montgomery County School Board President. We'll ask him why he defied Governor Hogan's order to start school after Labor Day. 7:45, excuse me, Corey Stewart, who just got canned by the Trump campaign for the Virginia organization. We'll find out why, and he'll tell us his story. And at 8:35, Larry Kudlow. I'm Larry O'Connor. A little tongue-tied next to Brian Wilson.
Well, it's because we're in the presence of greatness. That's what it is. It's always a good day, Mornings on the Mall, when we get the pleasure of having James Rosen in the studio. James, good morning to you.
Great to be back. Thank you, gentlemen.
James has come up with, call yourself the curator, the editor of a new book, which is doing quite well on the New York Times bestseller list. I mean...
So it's called A Torch Kept Lit.
Right.
Great Lives of the 20th Century. It's out now from Crown. You can get it on Amazon, or you can go to atorchkeptlit.com.
Okay.
I am the editor, the author. I tell people it's my best book, assuredly, ever, because it was actually written by the late William F. Buckley Jr., the conservative icon.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah. You know, it really is. It's a wonderful book, and I've had a chance to read some of it. Here's what... Christopher Buckley said, and this is really high praise, this collection of obituaries and eulogies that his father wrote over the course of his extraordinary career, admirably curated and eloquently introduced by James Rosen, may well establish William F. Buckley as the modern master of this literary form. I've read every one of my father's 60-odd books. I do not exaggerate to propose that this may prove to be William F. Buckley's finest book ever.
Wow. Yes,
James, that's really high praise.
It is indeed, and you're kind to have me on to discuss it. This is a collection of 50 eulogies that Bill Buckley, who knew everybody and skewered everybody and tangled with everybody, but he wrote or delivered across his extraordinary career. We have a section for presidents of the United States. We have a section for arts and letters. I like to say that A Torch Kept Lit is the only place in the world where Milton Friedman rubs elbows directly alongside Jerry Garcia of the Grateful Dead.
Yeah.
There are eulogies for John Lennon, Elvis Presley, Princess Di, Johnny Carson, Martin Luther King, all the, you know, the great presidents of the 20th century. It's a fascinating collection, and if there's someone in your family who loves history, politics, art, music, sailing, all the things that William F. Buckley loved, this is a book for them.
Well, and what I love about the book, James, is that the selections that you have presented here, you know, but you call yourself, you just say you're a curator, or you're just, you did work on this because you had to go through all of these eulogies and obits. And the ones that you selected are such a great shot into the past 40 years of American culture and politics, but also reveals so much about William F. Buckley.
Yes.
That's the part that's really cool. It's not just about who he's writing about, but the way he expresses his view of them. How much thought did you put into that?
Oh, well, you know, I've been a fan of Bill Buckley for many years, and in fact worked with him, and he gave me my start in journalism. But, you know, one of the recurring themes in A Torch Kept Lit is friendship. Bill Buckley cultivated friendships over 60 years' time in some cases. In fact, the very last eulogy in here is for his longest standing and best friend, someone he knew for 60 years, Van Galbraith. And I dare say that those who give this book as a gift will, for whatever occasion, find themselves deepening their own friendships with the recipients.
So you knew William F. Buckley, and as you say, he gave you your start. And as you go through all of this material, were there surprises for you, even though you knew him fairly well?
So, of course, William F. Buckley is principally known as the founder of National Review, the host of Firing Line, and, of course, being a best-selling spy novelist, but he really was the godfather of modern American conservatism. When Time magazine put him on its cover in 1967 with under a caricature of Bill Buckley, it said, William F. Buckley, Jr., conservatism can be fun. Ronald Reagan says that National Review was what made him a conservative, and he called Buckley the most profoundly influential intellectual and journalist of our times. In terms of surprises, the eulogy for Winston Churchill, who is a revered figure among conservatives, is a bit unsparing. He celebrates Churchill's accomplishments, Buckley does, up through the victory in World War II, but then faults Churchill for continuing to serve in office in the Cold War when he didn't have the stamina to prosecute it right fully, and thereby enabled one-third of the world to live under the Iron Curtain.
Interesting. And let me ask you, it's a tough situation. I think Rich Lowry, the current editor-in-chief of National Review, is in a tough situation.
And a good friend.
And a good guy. And you worked with William F. Buckley, as you just revealed, and you've known him. And I, to a lesser degree, I feel like I'm stuck in this similar situation with Andrew Breitbart. I worked with him. I was a friend of his. Everyone wants to know, in this election cycle, what would Andrew Breitbart really think of this? What would William F. Buckley really think about this? Of course, Lowry took National Review and took a very bold stand and said, never Trump, not going to happen. Based on your insight, and I'm sorry for putting you on the spot.
That's all right. Yeah, I actually put myself on, with the aid of a publicist, I put myself on this spot.
What do you think? Where would William F. Buckley go in the 2016 presidential election?
Of course, we can't know for sure. William Safire, the former Nixon White House speechwriter who became a Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist for the New York Times after Nixon died, used to once a year publish a column in which he would convert in quotes with the ghost of Dick Nixon about current events and personalities.
That's right, I forgot.
And they
about
made
that.
For marvelously entertaining reading, but they were specious in terms of historical value.
Right.
We do know that William F. Buckley wrote
specious.
Specious. Yes, that's the word of the day.
Thank you.
I want you to quiz
Today's
Corey Stewart.
Word is specious.
Bill Buckley did write about Donald Trump once in 2000, and he said, in essence, beware the narcissist. But Buckley had a credo that he tried to observe throughout his career, which is always to urge the election of what he called the most rightward viable candidate. And it's not can't be clear to us that if confronted with a choice, a binary choice of Trump and Hillary Clinton, that Bill Buckley would have continued to urge us to beware the narcissist.
He had a wicked sense of humor.
Yes.
And does that come through in some of these writings? And by the way, speaking of wicked sense of humor, so do you, and you do a very good impression, by the way.
Well, let's just tie this all into one, shall we?
That's what I was going for.
I'm here for you, babe.
Okay.
Do you need a cigarette to do the Buckley impersonation?
Yes, and perhaps a brandy snifter. my favorite Buckley line, first of all, was when in the Cold War, when Buckley was at the height of his influence, people would engage in moral equivalence. They would suggest that the KGB and the CIA are really the same guys. They just wear different trench coats. Buckley would say, men who push old ladies into the way of an onrushing bus and men who push old ladies out of the way of an onrushing bus, it seems to me, ought not to be grouped together as men who go around pushing old ladies around.
So now this is the sad thing about doing radio is that you couldn't see the tongue darting the way Buckley would, the eyebrow lift.
The slouch.
Yeah, he was so good at all of that.
Was great.
We've got more with James Rosen. I want to talk to you about, you're a big fan and you love talking about pop culture. I think given the choice, you would prefer to talk about pop culture than American politics once in a while.
As would Buckley, I think.
Well, that's my point. I got the sense there. And why is that so important that somebody has a well-rounded view of not just what goes on here in the Beltway, but what's going on our televisions, on our movie screens, and on our radios, music-wise, of course.
It conduces toward humanity.
There's that. Yeah. Hold your answer. We're going to delve into that and much more with the inimitable James Rosen. It is 7:15. Now WMAL. See, I said I got inimitable out, and now I can't get 7:15 out.
Specious.
WMAL traffic and weather every 10 minutes, first on the Fives. He raises the bar when he's here. Yeah,
right.
Rising
tide. Our vocabulary goes up 1,000.
Jamie Whitten, all eyes on you now. Get specious into your report from the Hadid Carpet Cleaning Traffic Center.
I love it. Thank you. And I love it that we now have the Baltimore-Washington Parkway has just reopened. southbound Baltimore Washington Parkway. This has been closed since before 1 this morning with a multi-car crash and investigation, but now you can get through. So if you're coming out of Jessup, say passing 175 and Route 32 up ahead, no longer detoured at 198. So really good news. Northbound side, that's been open the entire time, but rubbernecking to get by the activity. On southbound 95, obviously that was one of our alternates. You're going to pick up the extra volume, which was expected past 32 and 216 down toward the ICC. 29 as you head south of 216 toward the Patuxent. That has a bit of volume. And in 2, Burtonsville as well. Route 4, Pennsylvania Avenue, Dower House Road on the shoulder. Metro Rail, in addition to SafeTrack Surge number 9 this morning, Green Line trains are single tracking between Greenbelt and College Park due to unscheduled track repair. So expect delays on the Green Line as well. Now from GarageDoorRepair.com, the WMAL Weather Channel forecast.
Not a bad day today. In fact, a beautiful autumn day in the nation's capital. Sunny to partly cloudy with a high of 67. Tonight, partly cloudy skies, low of 52. Tomorrow, going to be even nicer than today. Just a few passing clouds, mostly sunny, though, with a high of 69. Right now, still kind of chilly, 48 degrees at 717.
It's 717. Our special guest today in studio, the one, the only, James Rosen of Fox News, who has written a new book, or he's actually curated a book, that is The Writings of William F. Buckley, The Great Lives. It's called A Torch Kept Lit, Great Lives of the 20th Century, and James is with us here now to talk about it. I love the fact that you really delve into some of his writings about pop culture, and you make the point that pop culture, you can't just be all about politics if you're going to be a well-rounded individual. You have to engage in pop culture, and he writes about the passing of Elvis Presley, Jerry Garcia, John Lennon.
Yeah, and you know, George Will has a blurb on the back of the book too, in which he says that Buckley understood that, in essence, he said, the purposeful life will be both serious and fun. Now, the greatest reversal in Bill Buckley's entire career as a polemicist and a controversialist and as an ideologue, as a conservative champion, the greatest reversal in his whole career came in 1968 in an article entitled How I Came to Rock. And this is referenced in his eulogy for John Lennon, because in 1964, when the Beatles came to America, Buckley called them not just awful, but god-awful. And he said that they will go down in the history of music the way the anti-popes go down in the history of the Catholic religion.
Oh, man.
And he received five times as many letters, angry letters, for that column in 1964 as anything else he ever wrote. And in 1968, he said, there is simply an exuberance there on the part of the Beatles that is unmatched. It is irresistible.
Oh, wow.
He did come around. Right.
What is it about great minds and great writers that lend their talents to writing obituaries? I think of Mark Stein as well. Mark Stein, of course, was so good at writing obituaries back, I think it was for The Atlantic, if I remember right. It does take a special talent, doesn't it?
It does. You're trying to conjure someone's personality. Mm-hmm. You're also trying to pay tribute to them and, in a sense, smooth their passage, but also derive the lessons from those lives. In the case of William F. Buckley and these eulogies in A Torch Kept Lit, Buckley himself, we must not forget, was a best-selling spy novelist, and he uses his novelistic skills to conjure these people directly. It's almost like you're sitting in the room with Ronald Reagan or Johnny Carson, or for the high-minded among us, Vladimir Nabokov, who he had lunch with once a year. Buckley knew these people personally. He's drawing on his own experiences with them, and often his personal private correspondence with them. It's really a glimpse into the great lives of the 20th century.
We had, talking about what's going on in the political world right now, we had Bob Schieffer's comment on here that he thought the debate was disgraceful. And I wonder what William F. Buckley would say about the debate we have just witnessed.
Buckley, in his own time, and this is clear from his eulogy of Richard Nixon in this book, recoiled from the profanity that he heard expressed in private that just happened to get released. I guess that's true, really, of this audio with Donald Trump as well. But I think Buckley would be saddened by the general cheapness and coarseness of the political discourse today.
Well, that's across the board. I mean,
yeah.
That's not specific to this campaign.
Although, of course, Mr. Trump has been the more frequent resorter to profanity on the stump, I would imagine.
Yeah.
I don't think Hillary Clinton has cursed at all on the stump. I think he would be saddened by how toxic things are.
Mm-hmm. James Rosen is our guest. Of course, he's the Fox News Channel National Chief Washington Correspondent out of the D.C. Bureau here. And given that role, and we love talking about your book, but we've got you here.
The nerve of you.
I would love to get you to comment on the latest revelations here about, you've been covering, of course, the Benghazi story as well as the email story from Hillary Clinton, and the latest revelations about how the FBI handled this investigation, especially with the preemptive immunity given to key figures in this scandal. What's going on with the FBI? You've watched this agency over the last several, 50 years now you've been covering Washington, D.C. politics?
You're so kind. Yeah. Well, look, there was also the agreement by the FBI apparently to destroy some evidence belonged to
Usually witnesses. You don't think of the FBI as being in the business of destroying evidence.
Yeah. You know, I happen to know that Paula Broadwell, the woman who was involved with General Petraeus and who has been cleared of crimes in two states, is still, these many years later, struggling to get back from the authorities her personal computers that have baby photos and things like that. And here you have the FBI agreeing to destroy the computers of some of the Clinton campaign folks, or the Clinton State Department folks, I should say. I think that James Comey overthought the whole thing, honestly, and I think I think that he wound up bringing upon the institution the very opprobrium, to use a Bill Buckley word.
Wow, another word. Yeah.
That he was seeking to shield it from.
When you say overthought, you mean he was concerned about the political fallout one way or the other?
I think that he recognized that due to the actions of Attorney General Lynch and just the whole set of circumstances, the pachinko machine was going to spit out the ball in such a way that he, as FBI director, was essentially going to have a very large role in potentially deciding this election. And he shrank from that reality. And I think that Antonin Scalia, for example, saw things shaping up very much the same way in 2000 with the Bush v. Gore decision, where essentially the Supreme Court was going to decide who won Florida and therefore who won the election. And Scalia and his colleagues did not shrink from that reality. And so Mr. Comey chose, in essence, an untenable middle course, which was publicly to impeach Hillary Clinton in lieu of indicting her.
Yeah, you know, speaking of which, I mean, so little has been said about that meeting on the tarmac between Clinton and the Attorney General.
And so that was raised in the debate.
In the debate, it was raised, but we haven't really talked about it a great deal. How did that impact the final decision by the FBI, in your estimation?
Well, it served to place the final decision in the hands of the FBI, because Loretta Lynch, the Attorney General, after having to acknowledge that she had met privately with former President Clinton for a half hour or so on an airplane in the days before a ruling was due in this case, was then forced publicly to announce that she was simply going to accept whatever decision came from the Department of Justice and the FBI.
James Rosenberg, we're almost done, but I got to ask you also, everybody knows, if they don't, I'll tell them, you're a huge Beatles nut. I mean, ridiculous. Probably.
Thank you very much.
I would say you're the foremost American aficionado of the Beatles and expert on the Beatles.
That is overly kind.
You've been working for a book for a while. What did you make of the Ron Howard documentary the Beatles concert years?
You're kind to bring it up.
Incredible, wasn't it?
So I had to literally fight my way out of the house to get to the Avalon Theater to go see it on a recent Sunday morning.
You didn't watch it on Hulu.
In fact, I learned, arriving about 90 seconds before the thing began, that if you saw it in the theater, you got 30 minutes of extra material.
I didn't know that.
That you will not get on Hulu, which was a restored version of the Shea Stadium concert from 1965.
Wow.
No one left. They all stayed for it. I would tell you that, with appropriate shame, that I sat in that theater, it was almost deserted, which was fine by me. And I cried for two straight hours. I mean, I just uncontrollably wept, just like the screaming girls in the movie. It was so brilliantly done. It so captured it all. I'm eventually going to inflict it on my sons so that they understand why there are still people like me. I am deeply grateful to Ron Howard for doing it.
Yeah, I thought it was a really wonderful piece of work.
I have one quibble.
What?
The name Pete Best was not spoken once in the movie. And the man's alive.
Right.
And
you're
it's
right.
called 8 Days a Week, the Beatles, the touring years. The man toured with the Beatles for 2 years.
And they even talked about the Germany years.
And if you look quickly, you can see him in the back of one photo.
There are pictures of him.
He rated a mention.
That's a great point. One thing that struck me really quick, we got to get out, was that they're such great musicians.
Yeah.
They kept saying they couldn't hear themselves in these live concerts at the stadiums when they sounded great.
They were in key. They were in, I mean, I don't know.
They were such
honestly,
pros.
I don't know how you do it.
But 50 years later, I still feel the cruelty of not being a Beatle.
It really is. It's a shame.
Well, I think we could say James Rosen is the modern fifth Beatle.
Thank you, sir.
James Rosen, always a pleasure. The name, the book, again, is A Torch Kept Lit, The Great Lives of the 20th Century, a compendium of the writings of William F. Buckley. James, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Hello, America. It's your new favorite podcast here.
Yes, it's James and Andy, two fourths of the British podcast, No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We do facts. We do weird facts, fun facts, facts you've never heard before. James, give us a fact.
Did you know you may be able to cure chronically blocked noses with a snot transplant?
Lovely, lovely facts.
If you want to hear us, go to wherever you get your podcasts and search for No Such Thing as a Fish.
That's right. We'll see you there.